This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Welcome to Keeping the Faith. Our guest today is Father George Pyle, who is the priest at the Three Hierarchs Greek Orthodox Church here in Champaign, Illinois. Welcome, George.
Nice to be with you, Steve.
Father George and his wife, Valerie, I guess Valerie is the owner of the restaurant, have just started a restaurant in town called Papa George. Where'd that name come from?
Well, we wanted something Greek sounding, and everything was too Greek. And then one day, Valerie said, "We're going with Papa George." I said, "Oh, no." And I'm kind of known around our community for helping out at church events by cooking, so kind of stuck.
All right. We're talking about God and food today is our topic, Grace You Can Taste. Food's mentioned a lot in the Bible. Why is food so important in not only the Christian faith, but other faiths as well, but certainly
Absolutely.
In the Christian faith?
Well, you know, if we go back to Genesis, we see that God gives Adam and Eve the ability to eat from the garden, except for one tree, of course. And if you go to chapter 18, what a beautiful passage of Abram and Sarah in the middle of the heat of the day, in the oak of Mamre. The Lord appears to Abram and Sarah. And it's incredible that Abram turns to Sarah, who's back in their home, and says, "Let us prepare something for them." These angels don't need to eat. But there was this type of fellowship of tending to their table. That, by the way, is a very important icon for the Greek Orthodox, for the Orthodox Christians, because that symbol of the three angels depict for us, if you will, the Holy Trinity. And that whole idea that we can serve the Holy Trinity. And with food, and later on, also in the New Testament, we see Jesus' ministry, feeding the 5,000. You and I were just talking about that passage. Where Jesus, in the middle of the wilderness, after teaching, says to the disciples, "Give them some food." And the disciples said, "We have 5 loaves. We have a couple of fish. What are we going to do?" And he said, "Bring them to me." And he blessed it, and he fed them in a miraculous way. So you see, food is definitely, it's a gift from God. It's a blessing from God. And that's why most traditions, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, so forth, offer thanks to God before eating. It is central.
Or after eating in some cases.
Yeah, right, absolutely. Right. In our case, we do both if we're doing it properly. So absolutely, yes.
I was just at a Muslim picnic yesterday evening, and locally the Interfaith Friendship Foundation of mainly Turkish Muslims. And boy, did they have a feast.
Oh, absolutely.
When you do a potluck, as we call it in this country, it can be some marvelous food.
That's right.
Now, when Greeks get together, there's a sort of a special love of food, isn't there?
There is.
Greeks are just known for their cooking and feasting.
Yeah, I used to be able to joke that the stereotype that every Greek man owned a restaurant wasn't true for me, but that's no longer reality. It is. Food is, my wife has often joked that food is a sacrament. It is a mystery. It is a part of our life. We don't usually sit down to eat and just put food on the table. There's a relationship with the people at the table, and therefore you want the food to be the best, and you want the presentation to look nice, and you want special things for special events, and you put a lot of time and effort because you're honoring that person that sits at your table. Breaking bread with someone is a holy event, as we saw, as we talked about from Genesis 18. So very much the Greeks have taken that. Early in this area in Champaign, the early Greeks weren't known necessarily for restaurants, but for confectionery stores, candy stores.
Oh.
And my mother-in-law, in fact, her family in Pennsylvania had a confectionery store with a little sandwich shop connected to it. So it was very common. And because Greeks have a way of spicing things and flavoring things and serving things, it became very natural for them to become restaurant owners and the like. So you see that, you know, within the Greek people and most of the churches throughout the country offer wonderful experiences for people to come and know the culture, know the people through the food.
Now, in the Orthodox Christian tradition, food is served at every service because you have
the
Eucharist.
Yeah, at every Eucharist. What's different in our tradition and not so much in other Christian traditions, but when we offer the Eucharist, people come having fasted. And that is fasting from the night before. So when they wake up that morning, they don't eat breakfast. They come having fasted, and they participate in the service. And as soon as the service is over, there's what we call the coffee hour. Well, let me tell you something. It probably should be called the buffet hour, because like the picnic you described yesterday, there's usually many wonderful things to eat, and people enjoy that aspect because it breaks also that type of fellowship on. And, you know, it's wonderful at Three Hierarchs. You see people from different traditions bringing something of their own ethnic background and sharing with other people, and people sit together, talk together, break bread together after the church service.
Some of our listeners may not know how wide the Orthodox Church is culturally and nationally, so they wouldn't know how diverse the food is when it's brought. Tell us a little bit about that.
That's a great question. In Three Hierarchs, for example, first of all, Orthodoxy is worldwide. And so because of the university here, Three Hierarchs represents probably about 15 different countries. America, of course. We have many people that were born here, raised here, of American stock. Now, no Greek, no Russian, no anything. But we have Russians, Ukrainians, Romanians, Greeks, Cypriots, people from Ethiopia. And so it's wonderful when they all come together and they understand that for them, they're celebrating one faith in Orthodox Christianity, but they can bring their culture with them. And they have little nuances things like that. So it's wonderful to see the cultures come together, the people come together and be one community. We had a strong group of Ethiopians this morning. And it's just so nice in the pocket of Central Illinois to be ministering to them and to working with them.
Tell us some of the ways that food appears in the Greek Orthodox year calendar.
Okay. Well, first of all, half the year, Orthodox Christians should be going vegan. In other words, no animal products at all. So we fast half of the year, at least, from meat, dairy, and fish. If we're really being good about it, we also fast from wine and oil on the strict fast days as well. But you can imagine going without any animal products. And you mentioned the restaurant before. We've been out at the farmer's market in Urbana. It was a great experience. We've really enjoyed the people there and love the relationship we've developed with them there. We have found many people that are vegetarians. And I always make my rice. It's kind of a funny thing. I always make my rice with chicken stock. But in this environment, I want to be able to appeal to the vegetarians, for example. And so the rice and the green beans are vegan, just like in our fasting lifestyle. You also asked about what the Orthodox do in food. I was telling some people today, they asked me why there were no lamb kebabs. Well, Greeks don't really do lamb kebabs. And the answer is when the lamb is right to be on a skewer, they put the whole lamb on. And that's the spring, a young lamb, flavorful. When the lamb gets older, they take the lamb and make it into stews, things that can simmer and soften the meat up and bring out the flavor that way. Very smart. And in this process, the meal that's eaten on Pascha or Easter, if you will, is lamb, baby lamb. Well, it's in the spring. It's always ready. It's always done on the spit. It's a beautiful experience. Again, they after 40 days of fasting, if you will, they come together and they have the Paschal lamb, and it's a celebration with cheeses and eggs and everything they fasted from, because now they're expressing their faith in the way they gather with one another in food.
One of my favorite theology books is a cookbook written by Robert Farrar Capon called Supper of the Lamb. And in that, he talks about how he hates the whole idea of dieting, of not eating enough of something, limiting things. But he loves the idea of fasting and then feasting.
Right.
and as a way to control weight, as a way to be healthy. He says this ancient way is much superior to dieting.
Well, it's interesting. I can cite the New England Medical Journal of May of 1984. It was the year and month I graduated from seminary. And Steve, they came out with this this study that said, we've discovered that by going vegan for 40 days, they said 6 weeks, but 42 days and 40 days, is very healthy for the heart. And of course, every priest in the country said, yeah, see, we've been telling you. So it's a very good cleansing thing, and it really does. It makes you appreciate things a lot more.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this afternoon with Father George Pyle. His wife, Valerie, has just opened a restaurant, sort of named in his honor, Papa George in Champaign, on Neal Street, the former, what was it called?
Pickles restaurant.
Where their Greek food is served. We're talking about God and food, grace you can taste.
I love that.
We encourage listeners to call in with questions or comments or recipes or whatever they'd like.
Absolutely.
In Champaign-Urbana, the number is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. Elsewhere, if it's a long-distance call, do use our toll-free line, 1-800-222-9455. And that includes listeners on the Internet. If you're listening at WILL.UAUC.edu, where incidentally these programs are archived as well, in case you've missed part of this or will have to miss part of it, you can check out via computer that this program and others from the past. But happy to have your calls for Father George Pyle. And we have a call already on line number one. You're on Keeping the Faith. Go ahead, please.
Well, good afternoon. Enjoying and been waiting for this program for some time and listening to you talk about it. I'm an old fan of the Katsina family. And how far down the street is your restaurant from the old Katsina's restaurant?
It's literally across the street from where Katsina's restaurant was.
That's what I thought when you said pickles. I thought it's got to be close.
That's right.
And do you have some of the old recipes that they had, or are they all Papa George's recipes?
Well, they're all Papa George's recipes, but let's tell you what happened. Day one, someone walked in. When my wife and I moved here, Katsina's had already closed. So we were sad there was no Greek restaurant in town. In fact, I've often joked when people said, as a priest, how in the world did your family decide to open a restaurant? And I've replied, we're tired of driving to Chicago for good Greek food. And one of the first customers came in. His name is Lou. He said, the thing I enjoyed the most were the steak bites at Katsina's restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
Greek-flavored steak. And my wife and I kind of chuckled. We weren't going to put it on the menu. But that's the way we cook our steak at home, Greek-style flavoring. And so it's now on the menu, so you can get it there. So, you know, we've had many people come in and say that they've missed that restaurant and speak very highly of it.
Well, I brought my wife 28 years there many, many years ago on a date when I was selling church organs. In fact, I sold the organ to the Three Hierarchs Church out there.
Wow, how neat.
Many years ago. So anyway, looking forward to coming up there and supping with you all sometime. Thank you very much.
That would be great. And let me know when you're in, and I want to treat you to something to celebrate that first date with your wife.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
When you decided to open the restaurant, how did you decide which Greek dishes to serve? Because there's so many.
There are so many. We knew what the basic Greek dishes are in most every Greek restaurant. The shish kebab, for example, the souvlaki, as we call it. The pastitsa, which is the Greek lasagna. The moussaka, the eggplant casserole. We knew that those had to be staples in the restaurant. Those are just a limited example. We're also going to be adding some specials that will appear twice a week, for example, Thursday and Saturday and Wednesday and Friday, for example, that will be very different dishes, avant-garde dishes, things that you wouldn't find in every restaurant. And we think that the people, and they've really responded to it well. We served a couple of weeks ago the lamb kokinisto, the lamb and red sauce. People responded to it very well. Last night on the menu, we sold out. It was so good. We sold out of the fresh fish, escalar, that we grilled. And, you know, we think of it also as a little bit of a ministry, because we put forth something that is not breaded, that is grilled on the grill, that is very healthy. The moussaka, for example, the eggplant casserole I talked about before, most Greek restaurants take the eggplant and they batter it. They put breadcrumbs on it before they layer it. We do not. We know that there are a lot of people looking at the carb count. Now, we have to put the potatoes on the bottom, but that's something you can not eat the crust, if you will. And then we layer it with just ingredients. So it's basically, if you don't eat the potatoes, it's very carb, non-carb friendly. And those are kinds of things that we're trying to do, fresh foods. And so my wife is wonderful. She kind of looked at things and she said, this is what we want to do and this is how we want to do it. And we want to keep the quality because we want to give people something. The lamb of the lamb cooking stall is raised just for the restaurant. There is, when it gets to a certain poundage, it's brought to slaughter. We don't let it get older. We don't let it get tough. We don't let it get fatty. And we feel that that's a way we can help the community, both with their diets, if you will, and with their eating styles. And that's how we made the decisions. We want to know what we could offer that's the best and good choices for people.
So for people who need to make those choices or choose to make those that decision about lack of fat, sugar, whatever, you have options, but you also have some pretty phenomenal desserts.
That we do. Yeah, we have some phenomenal desserts. We have we opened, the first day we opened, we gave out free baklava sundaes, which is a Papa George kind of original ice cream surrounded by baklava crumbles, which is that walnut pastry with honey, and in phyllo dough, and then topped with a little chocolate sauce on it. We also have a dessert called bugatza, which is a custard dessert. And here's another option here, Steve, where it's almost healthy. As desserts go, it is very healthy. It's a farina whole wheat cereal. It's eggs and milk. They're made into a custard and cooled, and then it's wrapped in phyllo dough with a little bit of butter, and then baked. Now, we top it with powdered sugar and cinnamon. Someone came in today and said, I'd like mine without. Absolutely, not a problem. Because we know that people are watching, you know, how they eat. And I think it's a wonderful dessert. People love it. It's not found in every Greek restaurant. It's something we knew we wanted to bring to the table, a little different. And so, yeah, we have quite a few that... and what's the most traditional one that someone can get? A yogurt with Greek honey. The yogurt has been strained, so all the liquid is out of it. It has the consistency of a sour cream. A little sour to the taste as well. Sweet honey over it. Walnuts. It's a great, healthy... We can even serve it with fruit if someone doesn't want the honey.
What's that called?
That Greek yogurt and honey.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's very simple. That is, by the way, what a Greek person eats for dessert. We don't eat the baklava every day. We eat it at weddings and special sure. events. But we eat the yogurt, very healthy for the digestion. And that's the kind of thing we want to bring to the table, some healthy choices as well. And it's been very well received so far.
Now, when we talk about the relation of eating, in the Orthodox Church, the sacrament involves bread, involves wine. Why do you think that is?
I think Jesus took the basic elements at the Last Supper. Imagine, he's going to give his final discourse to his disciples that he's worked with for about 3 years. He could have done it just sitting next door and talking to someone. They didn't have to gather, but he made sure the room was prepared. And it was the Passover meal. So he communicated to them some elements of what they were going to continue to do. Said, do this in remembrance of me. And there they were, and he took the most basic elements of the earth, wheat and wine. And let me give you an example. Today in worship today, we blessed grapes. Now, probably in Illinois, we probably should have blessed corn. But on the Feast of the Transfiguration, which is tomorrow, we bless the grapes, and the grapes, of course, will end up becoming wine in for many grapes. Most of these grapes were eaten today, of course. The idea is that he took the basic elements, and one of the things that St. John Chrysostom remembered in his liturgy that we use is when we lift up those gifts, presenting them to God, we say, your own gifts of your own. In other words, we're offering these things back to you. And isn't that the purpose, not only with our food, but our whole life? offering back ourselves as a gift to God. And so that whole sense of bread and wine, mysteriously in our case, believing that it becomes the body and blood of Jesus Christ, very powerful. Those gifts becoming something holy, something special.
You also, I know, have something called the blessing of the five loaves.
Right.
Tell us about that.
I had a service this morning of that. A person celebrating their name day, it's a feast day, they want to honor the whole congregation, so they bake five large loaves of sweetened bread, almost like a Portuguese bread or a challah bread, very full. And then we say some prayers. We remember that the Lord provided food for those in the wilderness, and we take those five loaves after blessing them, and we distribute them at the conclusion of the service, and everybody gets a piece. And it's a reminder of the blessings that God has. So you imagine going, having fasted, and having now this wonderful taste of sweet bread as you leave the church. Very warming, at least for me, to think of, you know, it's a connection.
When you have the food after your typical worship service on Sundays, do people bring that, or is it prepared at the church? How is that done?
It depends. Most Sundays, people bring that. People sign up during the year that they'll host the fellowship hour. Two or three families get together, and they provide all kinds of things. Since we're fasting this Sunday, we had a lot of fruit. We had some veggies. We had kinds of breads, so forth. And three families got together and provided that. On some Sundays, we just have a dinner, and the church provides that. People cook. They come in, little groups of people, and they provide a dinner, and everybody sits down and has a full meal after church. And it's a really wonderful time of fellowship. It really has the opportunity for people to sit and talk with one another and to get to know one another better. Because the parish that I represent goes as far south as Louisville, which is an hour and a half south of Effingham. And that lady comes every Sunday.
Wow.
As far west as Leroy. As far north as Paxton, and as far east as Danville. So it's kind of spread out. So some of these people don't get a chance to see each other during the week.
Sure.
So they come together, they have worship, they worship God, and then they have some fellowship with one another. It's a great experience.
Since, as you just indicated, there are not very many Greek Orthodox families, people in central Illinois, tell listeners who may never have had an experience in worship in a Greek Orthodox church what it's like. What's the first thing that a visitor might encounter as they walk in the door?
As they walk in the door, the first thing they usually encounter is the visual sight. Icons depicting the Lord and the saints to remind us of why we're there. Then the smell of incense, lightly present within the church. We're touching all the senses, the sight, the smell, and of course we talked about the taste. And then the other thing that they will experience, even though we have pews in our church, we don't use them very often. There's a lot of standing. The service is an hour and a half long, the Divine Liturgy, and most of it is standing. And people stand in the presence of God. That's the way we look at it. We all face the same direction. We start with some litany of prayers representing the people. Today, for example, we remembered the tragedy in Minneapolis, St. Paul, in the litany of prayers. Then we have the gospel and the epistle reading, a sermon. And then we go right to the Eucharist, the Lord's Supper. And once everybody receives, some concluding prayers, and we're on our way. It's a wonderful service. People are welcome to visit. We don't have an open communion, but they are welcome to come and participate in everything else in the parish.
And say some words about the music, because the music is so particularly beautiful in Orthodox churches.
The music is done a cappella. The early church, and the man that called talked about the organ in the church, but really in Orthodox lands there is no organ. And we sing a cappella and in different modes every Sunday to make the liturgy and the worship more vibrant. And it's done completely by every member at Three Hierarchs, by every member in the congregation. We don't have a choir per se. We have them, but they lead the people in worship. And almost all of our service is done in English. Some parts are repeated in Greek, Romanian, Slavonic, which is Russian, or Arabic. And I do say some words in Unamharic, which is the language of Ethiopia. When I see those people there, I want to honor them as well. So it's a great opportunity we have to use different languages and different styles of song and chant for them.
And talk about the icons a bit.
The icons. An icon for us is a reminder. It's a window into heaven. When we look at the icon of Christ, we know that icon just depicts Christ. And that when we see him, we're reminded of Christ. So it's not, you will see us go up and stand before it and offer prayers, but we're offering prayers to Christ himself. And in this case, paying our respects as you would if you saw a loved one that had passed. And you hold the photograph up and you say that loved one's names and say, this was a beautiful day we spent together, so forth and so on. That's exactly the way we see an icon.
We have another caller waiting on line one. Let me remind others, if you'd like to give us a call, if it's a long-distance call, use 1-800-222-9455 in Champaign-Urbana, 333-9455. Yes, go ahead. Line number one.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you for the wonderful topic. And I would like to ask a question, especially we are talking about the food and religion. Why the West, especially United States, using the food as a weapon against some nations, as they did with Iraq, actually, and as a result of that sanction, we lost. I'm sorry to shift your talk. You're talking about the food, which is a wonderful thing, but this is the reality, and both of you are very aware of. What's happening actually in that part of the world. Why the United States always they rush to punish the nation, some nations like what they did with Iraq by preventing the food to go there and let the people live their own life. And from your talk, which is, as you mentioned, in Islamic faith and Christianity and Judaism, the food is so important. To enjoy, actually, not to use it as a weapon. I don't know. I'm going to hang up and listen to you, and I hope it will not happen again. Hopefully, some people who has the authority to listen to you, and hopefully they will learn from you, gentlemen. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call.
That's a great question. I am of the opinion, and I think, Steve, you probably are as well, that food and medicines should never be held in such a way to punish people. I would think that we would never do that for even a prisoner, for example. We give them, we treat them, we honor them, because as you know, Muslims, Christians, Jews, and many people see the person in the image and likeness of God. So to feed them, to give them medicine, is to respect that person. Even if you don't agree with their political stance or their religious views, you honor them. For example, the man mentioned that he was Muslim. When I come into the restaurant and I see someone Muslim, I make sure they know that the souvlaki that we serve is pork-based. I know that's not within their tenets, and I want to make sure. I always ask, "Do you eat pork?" And I want to respect them. But what's happened here throughout the world, not only with this situation in Iraq, but in many instances when we've caused people to hunger, and this is a sin. We should not be about that in any way. I was disappointed, you know, when this whole thing started and the bombing in Afghanistan and Iraq and so forth and so on, I was disappointed in the Christian church for not taking a stand when we knew that Baghdad was not having drinking water. There should have been a movement here in this country to provide everyone with supplies and water. This country had the resources. We knew the people of Iraq were not a problem. We should have provided that. I think that's the way we show our love for humanity. Even if we disagree with someone, we provide for them the basics. Steve, I don't know if you have any thoughts, but that's what comes to my mind.
Well, I think you're right. Food, decent drinking water, medicine, is something that should be available for everyone, even our enemies, and it's perhaps especially our enemies as a sign of love.
Absolutely.
And how do you break down enmity? It's not by causing sacrifice and pain. It's by somehow living out forgiveness, living out a self-giving love.
Right. Let me.
That doesn't mean you have to put everything at risk to do that.
Absolutely. You sparked my mind to go back to ancient Greece and food, when there was the fight over the Trojan War, so forth, and it's mentioned in the Iliad and Odyssey, and they came through Pylos, which was my home ancestral town. King Nestor took two warriors, and there was a box outside of his palace, and each warrior took off their suit of armor, if you will, so that they could not be distinguished as which side they fought on. And they both came in and they ate inside the palace. Huh. They were given the best of everything for that night. They might go after each other the next day, but there was a sense of civility that we're going to honor each person, no matter what they are, whether they agree with us or not. I think if we had this in our thinking, our world would be much more blessed, that's for sure.
And the best teaching of all the major world religions that I know of always have an important part of their ethics to feed the hungry,
Absolutely.
To feed the poor.
Absolutely.
And that the society is judged by how successfully that happens. We have another caller on line number 4. Go ahead, please.
Hello. Your programs are always very nice. I wanted to ask the priest a little bit more about the fasting. You said meat, poultry, fish, and oiled sometimes, and something else.
Dairy.
Oh, the dairy, yeah.
Right.
But there was something else with oil.
Sometimes when we fast from oil, it's on Wednesdays and Fridays.
Yeah.
When there are strict days for religious purposes. For us, Friday was the day, for example, that Christ was crucified. So we fast every Friday almost during the year. And we get rid of the oil. When you get rid of oil, you know you're fasting. You can get by. You know, think of a salad without any oil on it, maybe just a little lemon juice. It's very stark. It's very hard to enjoy. But the whole idea is that you can appreciate the presence of the oil, which has a type of blessing. Oil was blessed in many occasions. And so for us, when we get rid of it, we by controlling what goes into our lives, we have better discipline about what comes out of our life, that we can be more loving, more giving, more genuine. And that's how we fast.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to ask you, though, what do you eat besides, you know, you eat fruit and
right.
fresh fruit and vegetables, and would that be raw then? Or
no, they can be cooked. You know, there are
beans?
a lot of beans, exactly. Some types.
Oh, like beans and rice?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And some types of shellfish which have no blood, things like squid or clams or shrimp, even though they have.
Oh, you can eat shellfish.
Some types of shellfish, yes.
Mm-hmm. And do you know anything about rose water? My
yes.
mother used to get rose water. And I don't know, I don't remember what she used it for. You know, she would be like 100-something years old now. She was born in 1889.
Wow.
And so what I want to say is no one seems to know how rose water was used. I mean, I'm Italian descent.
There you go.
But, you know, like I say, it's an ancient town.
Right.
And I don't know. Do you know anything
about
rose water?
Yeah, well, actually, the Greeks used rose water as well.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, it was used as a natural perfume externally.
She didn't use this for that.
Right. The second way that it's used often in several recipes for cookies mm-hmm. because the rose water, because of the glycerin, is softer. So the cookies would come out more gentle, if you will.
Oh, but she didn't make cookies.
Well, we got to find out what she used it for.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's the way I've seen it used.
I'll die without knowing the answer.
You have to go back to her village in Italy and find out how they used it, and then let me know because I'm curious now.
Well, there are so many people that are left, you know.
Sure.
I, I don't know. But, you know, there are a lot of the Greeks have a lot of the same thing as we use. Like you have the green beans with the tomatoes.
Exactly.
And that. But what do you use? I mean, the oil, you know, we use so much oil. You said the lemon.
Right,
so
lemon.
That's good.
I've also, when I cook during Lent, what I do is I boil water. And then instead of softening onions and garlic and oil, which is normally the way I do it, mm-hmm. I soften them in a boiling water. It's not as tasty.
Right.
But it's still very vibrant. When I go to monasteries and I've eaten their food there and they are strict fasting, I'm telling you, I don't miss anything. I don't miss anything. Thank you for your call.
Appreciate the call very much. We have another caller waiting on line one. I'll get to that in just a minute, but let me just say a couple words. We're talking on Keeping the Faith today with Father George Pyle, who is a priest at Three Hierarchs Orthodox Church in Champaign, which is located right west of Neal Street off of Devonshire, Three Hierarchs Greek Orthodox Church. His wife, Valerie, has just opened a restaurant called Papa George. If you want information and see a menu, you can go to papageorgegreek.com. If you want to call to find out about when the hours of the restaurant are open, it's on Neal Street in Champaign. You may call 356-1930. I'm Steve Shoemaker, the usual host for Keeping the Faith. This radio program is heard every Sunday night from 5 to 6 on WILL AM 580, a radio service of the College of Communication here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Let's go now to a caller on line number one. Yes.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. I'm just responding to the discussion on rose water. When I was in college, I had a friend from Iraq, and she made desserts and put rose water on them. I wish I could tell you what the name of it was, but I can't. But it was good.
I think that the Arabs who created baklava, that the Greeks call baklava, the Arabs use rose water in that. It's what sweetens theirs. Their baklava is not as sweet as the baklava because the Greeks use a honey sauce. So I think that that's one of the recipes, for example. But that's not typically Italian, so I'm kind of stumped at what that lady's mother used. But you bring up a great, great point.
Well, I know the dessert was good. Thank you.
Thank you
for the call. Support for these Keeping the Faith programs is provided in part by the University YMCA, where I'm the executive director. One of the big programs coming up at the Y this August is our big dump and run recycling program, where we take household goods, furniture, kitchenware, all kinds of things, even clothes, electronic things, and people donate them to the Y as they're often leaving town or perhaps moving house, as the British say. And then we have a huge sale. The sale starts Thursday, August 23rd at 2 o'clock from 2 till 9 p.m. It's at the Stock Pavilion on Pennsylvania Avenue, the University of Illinois Stock Pavilion. It's also, the sale will go on Friday from 10 to 6 and Saturday from 9 till noon. We'll still be collecting things for that sale. If you have something in your attic or garage or drawers, closets you want to get rid of, Monday, August 13 from 6 to 8, Tuesday and Wednesday, August 14 and 15, and then Friday and Saturday, the 17th and 18th, from 9 till 8 at night on Friday and Saturday from 9 till 1. So those are some of the things you can donate to the Y, recycle it. We sell them very inexpensively to especially returning students, new international students who come to this town in the fall. But community people are invited as well to get some bargains. If you have any questions about that, do call the Y, 337-1500 in area code 217.
And Steve, I plan to be with you.
Oh,
I'm
nice.
Going to actually volunteer some time.
Oh, how nice.
And come down, and I want to see how that works. And
well, it's quite a scene to see thousands of people, particularly students, coming in those first couple of days, often outfitting a whole apartment, you know, for $100
Absolutely.
Bucks or
and
so.
It's a great service also for the international students. I'm glad you mentioned that because it helps them provide for their home.
It really
it's
does.
Great.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about the Greek Orthodox campus ministry here at the University of Illinois. You've added a housing portion of that recently.
Yeah, this will be our fourth year. We've completed 3 years. It's on the corner of 2nd and John. It's called the Orthodox Christian Center. Houses 14 students seven male, seven female, and it's really been a wonderful blessing, giving students an alternative to their living. And not to mention, we were talking about fasting a lot during the program, but it's helpful when you're fasting to have others around you that are also fasting, going through that same. And they make cooperative meals, and it's really wonderful.
And do you have any openings for this fall?
I do. I have a couple of guy openings. So it's we're coming down to the wire here, and the students are calling and moving in and so forth like that and very shortly. And so I hope to fill those.
Now, is it limited just to Orthodox students?
No, it's open to everyone. It's a member of the private certified housing with the university.
So even first-year students could live there?
Absolutely. Freshmen can live there. Any student at the university could live there, or students at Parkland for that matter.
And the University of Y also has housing for – we just have room for male students. We have 12 students who live on our third floor. And just like the Orthodox house, we're in a great location, very close to the quad. And we still have, I think, three openings at the Y.
Yeah. And actually, I have to say, your location's very much a prime. It's a great location.
Great location. Absolutely. Right on Wright Street. Yeah. And we've had housing for students for – 100 years, so it's a good place for for male students to live, and also Parkland students can be there, and it's also very inexpensive. We try to focus on making it inexpensive. we consider it part of the ministry of the Y as well. Mm-hmm. It's open to students of any religious tradition or of none, of course, as well. Let's talk a little bit about other things that you do in the Orthodox ministry on campus.
Well, we meet every Tuesday night, and it's interesting. The topic we came up with was the title, rather, is Feast on Faith. And so we have a 6 p.m. dinner open to any student on Tuesday night where we provide the food. And then it's from 6:30 to 7:30, we have a spiritual discussion on some topic. If we were meeting this Tuesday, for example, I'm sure we would be talking about tragedies that happen that are unforeseen, like the bridge collapse in Minneapolis-St. Paul. And so we have some open kind of conversation, spiritual discussion, and providing a difference. Many students come, you know, just to eat. Some come and stay for the discussion and make it nice and lively. And so it's a wonderful thing. We also do some philanthropy on campus. We adopted a street last year to keep it clean. Actually, it was the street portion right in front of Hillel. So it was very, very good. And so the ministry is vibrant. We have about 350 Orthodox Christian students on campus every year from all parts of the world, but especially a lot from Illinois and Chicago specifically.
When you talk about the response this week to the issue of tragedy, food is such a obviously life-affirming thing, and that's one reason I'm sure that it's so important to so many different religious traditions. But when the tragedy came to Virginia Tech that affected college students, how did your Orthodox students respond? What kind of questions did they ask you that week when there were so many deaths of people their age at another state university?
Right. Well, you know, we thought it was a long distance away. And one young lady that lives in the house called me and she said, you know, Father, one of my friends was wounded there. And then about 10 minutes later, another girl called me and said, the young lady that used to go to school here at Centennial, who died.
Had been killed, yes.
Right. And she was one of her good friends from Girl Scouts. And so suddenly it wasn't a long way away. And we regrouped the night of the tragedy to talk about safety issues and concerns and also the community because the students were shaken. I worried about the ones that weren't. But many of the students were shaken as if to say, you know, this could have been here.
Sure.
This could have been me. And suddenly their mortality, they haven't probably faced it. And that's why I was kind of concerned about the ones that were so cavalier and, you know, it seemed like, again, something way far away. But it was very scary, very troubling. And I know that we were talking about private certified housing. We've spent some time in our meetings as of late, just developing an emergency plan so that if, God forbid, something like that happens at the University of Illinois, we can take steps to make sure the security of other students is there. And so I'm really proud of this university for the private certified housing. Marianne Brockert leads that group. They really worked, and we put in some hours on it. And, it was great to see them tackle this, you know, as a possibility and, you know, something to prepare for.
We're down to our last 12 or so minutes on this program with Father George Pyle from the Orthodox Church in Champaign, Three Hierarchs, and the Orthodox Campus Ministry here at the University of Illinois. If you have a question, excuse me, or comment on any of our topics for conversation today, please join in. You can do that by phone. 1-800-222-9455 is a toll-free number. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several lines you can reach by punching in 333-9455. Father George, we're talking about your restaurant, Papa George Restaurant on Neal Street. Tell us about the appetizers. We haven't talked about the appetizers, and they're so diverse, and I've enjoyed several of them.
Yes.
Tell us about those.
Well, I think the most popular appetizer in the last week, we introduced it last Friday, is the Saganaki, the flaming cheese. Cheese that's been lightly floured, fried in olive oil on both sides, and then brought out on a sizzling platter, where some brandy is used on the platter and it's ignited at the table. And the server screams, opa, which is the Greek word for your cheese is on fire. No, it's the Greek word for, oh boy, whippy, yeehaw, something like that. And so that's a great, fun appetizer. But we have a lot of appetizers that are very healthy. The yogurt and cucumber dip called tzatziki. A little bit of dill and some garlic. Very wonderful flavor. You can have that with raw veggies or with pita bread. It's just a great thing. Hummus. We always have hummus. There's another vegan dish, if you will. Our hummus has been getting rave reviews out at the farmer's market in Urbana. We also have a dip that's a little bit avant-garde. It's a caviar dip that the Greeks eat almost year-round, and it's called Tarama salata. Tarama is the caviar. It's whipped with bread and olive oil and a little bit of onion. It's wonderful. It's not too heavy, but it's a little different taste. We're also bringing on one of my favorites as an appetizer, the grilled zucchini done on the grill, nicely done in a marinade, and it will come with scordaia, which is one part potato and 35 parts garlic. It's really strong. And have a little bit of that. Make sure everybody that's in your party is also eating it. And garlic has a lot of good properties. It's very good for the body, very good for healing and lowering blood pressure, they say. So those are some of the ones that come to mind.
Tell me about the appetizer that you can also get a larger portion for an entree that involves spinach.
Yeah, the spanakopita. We do homemade spinach pies. We have someone that comes in just to roll the spinach pies, small ones for appetizers in the little triangle, traditional triangle format, and then the larger ones for dinner. And that is something good for someone that doesn't eat meat. When it's served as a dinner or a lunch, it's served on a plate with some rice and some green beans and tomato sauce, which our one caller alluded to. And it's a wonderful, wonderful meal, getting away from the meat, if you will, and so forth. That's one of my favorites. I try to stay away from it because it's addicting. I really love the phyllo dough and the spinach and the cheeses, nice feta cheese. We also have a feta cheese and olive plate, imported feta, imported olives, of course, our own marinade. It's just really yummy.
Now, when you think about starting a restaurant as a priest and his wife doing this, so many restaurants fail.
Sure.
And if this doesn't work, if you lose money, if you have to sell, is this a sign that God was against it? People often ask these questions.
Not that God was against it. Maybe we didn't do a good job with it. God is blessing us in so many ways. But I do think that it's a way for us, both Valerie and I, love to cook. We love to entertain. We love to meet with hospitality to people. I can't tell you, though. I think we've taken out maybe in our first month about 800 to 1,000 sample plates for people to try. And several people have said, you know, you're not going to make money if you keep giving. Well, we want people to have a good experience. We've made it clear to people, you know, if you don't like the taste of it, if it's too strong, we'll take it back for you. You can order something else. We want people to come in and feel at home. If we have something ready, we've sampled that dish out before they ordered it. Give them a little sample of it. So there's this whole hospitality. It's not that commercial aspect. You know, that's what you order, take it or leave it. But no, we consider the people that walk in our doors to be not clients or customers, but really people that are at our table. And we want them to feel at home and welcome. And so we are always making table visits and greeting people, those that we know, like when I've seen you and your wife in there, or people that we've never met. And some people come and say, oh, you're the new owner. Let me tell you what I liked on the old pickles menu.
Sure, sure.
And I say, that's great. We're going to keep the popular things and, you know, the things that get ordered once a month. Well, I don't think they'll be so visible here anymore. So.
Now, one of the problems of offering hospitality, though, is that sometimes too many people can come.
And, that's true.
And then you have people waiting and they're unhappy and it takes so long to get food. And how do you deal with that?
That has been occasionally a problem where we've had people 20 to 25 tables walk in right at 6 o'clock and it overwhelms the kitchen.
Sure.
We try to take care of people. We try to get the food out as fast as we can, but to do it properly. The other thing is we've been known to pull out some of those spinach triangles, the spanakopitaiki that you were talking about, and give people a little free appetizer when things are bad, like you would do in your home. You know, if you all were preparing meal for some company and it wasn't out, you would do, you know, if the roast took more, the Thanksgiving turkey took more, you'd you know, bring out maybe another appetizer, another, you know, salad or something. So we're treating people like they're part of the family, if you will.
Now, how did you first learn to cook?
That's a great question.
At home?
My grandfather was a great cook. He would cook all the entrees for the big events, Easter, Christmas, so forth. So I had it ingrained the way he cooked. I would watch him. He didn't live with us, but we were there at many family events. And then my mom, she was a great cook as well. She taught me how to follow recipes and do things like that. And then later, I started getting a fancy of wanting certain, I lived on my own, wanted the certain foods that, you know, I had grown up with. And I figured out I could follow the recipe and do it, and it became a love. And then when I met my wife, Valerie, we have a funny story that she has a spinach pie recipe and I have a spinach pie recipe. And whose was better? And literally at one family celebration of Easter, we told everybody that they'd have to vote. I would make mine and she would make hers. And we were really bad about it because we made one recipe. And everybody voted and it came down to...
They thought they could tell the difference.
They thought one person absolutely knew the difference and the votes came out even. And there was one person who didn't vote and she was the Greek grandmother. And she said, I would never do that to the married couple. I abstain from voting. But it's kind of great because we have different tastes. We have different recipes.
Sure.
Some are used my recipe. Some are Val's recipes in the restaurant. We're having fun with it. And, you know, I like a little more oregano or dill in a dish. She likes it a little more subtle. You know, it depends on how we settle on each dish is different. So cooking has been a lifelong experience. I'm still learning. I watch a lot of cooking shows, and I like to watch people's techniques and see how they do things. I'm not afraid to try a new recipe, and if it fails, so be it. It fails, and I've had a couple failures at the restaurant, things that just didn't work out, even though I've made them before, but it's been a good process.
And how about switching from small meals to quantity?
Well, because I have the experience of cooking at the church, our last open house in January, we served 350 people out of a very small kitchen for lunch. So I kind of get... The one thing I have is that experience of cooking large, and it, you just can't double or triple or multiply the recipe. You have to really think it through and think of what's going to work here and there. And quite honestly, the first couple of weeks at the restaurant, we struggled with the rice because we went vegan. We couldn't get the vegetable stock we wanted. We finally found one that was great. So it took a couple of adjustments. And that's what you have to do in any business, in ministry or any business. You have to make adjustments to make things work at the best level. And I think we've done that. So it's kind of exciting. Now I don't test the rice every day. We've come up with the perfect formula and the way to cook it, and I'm just delighted.
What kind of bread is used at Three Hierarchs for the Lord's Supper?
It's a special bread that just contains water, yeast, and flour with a little salt. Nothing else. And the parishioners make it, and they offer it. They put a seal on it, which has the host seal on it, and they bring it into liturgy. We use about four of them every Eucharist, one for distribution at the end and one for the host and so forth.
What time are your services at Three Hierarchs Orthodox Church?
9:30 a.m. on Sunday morning. We go till 11, and a wonderful, all in English, people could follow along. I think it would be a great experience if they wanted to come by and visit.
I want to thank our callers today who've joined our conversation about God and food, Grace You Can Taste, with Father George Pyle. And, of course, thank Papa George for being here and for telling us about his wife's new restaurant experience. And,
thank you, Steve.
And encourage people to give it a try if you like Greek food. Next week on Keeping the Faith, we'll be talking with Dr. David Gross. He's a Unitarian Universalist who has spent several weeks over the past many years with 60 teenagers or so on an island for a week learning how to sail, and he'll have some interesting experiences to share with us about that. That's next week, August 12th, here on Keeping the Faith. On August 19th, our guests will be Ty Newell and Mike McCauley. Those professors will be talking about the Solar Decathlon House of the University of Illinois. On August 26th, Rabbi Dovid Teichzel will be our guest talking about the Jewish New Year. Coming up in September, Ed Kolodziej will be one of our guests. Joel Schweitzer, director of Hillel, will be a guest. Rafe Melhado and his wife Jessica, talking about Jewish studies in Israel, and Emmy Fisher from the United Way. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. If you have questions about programs at the University Y, please call us at 337-1500. Thanks for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keepin' the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
Daniel Pinchbeck may be the next Timothy Leary, the new guru of psychedelic drugs. He says psychedelic experiences have launched him into new realms of consciousness. I'm Jim Fleming. Next time, unto the best of our knowledge, we'll hear the latest science on brain plasticity. Who says you can't teach an old brain new tricks? It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, mostly cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The low in the lower 70s with southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow, partly sunny, hot, and humid with a chance of showers and thunderstorms. The high in the lower 90s with southwest winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, mostly cloudy with the low in the lower 70s and south winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. This is WILL Urbana, listener-supported public radio. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.